Welcome to the inaugural Pro Football Weekly podcast. It is my great honor, my name is Arthur Arkish, to be helping bring you this podcast. Pro Football Weekly has been around for nearly 50 years through really all mediums, from the draft book to the Pro Football Weekly TV show and everything in between. But if memory serves, I think this would be the first PFW podcast, so that is exciting. I am pleased to be joined by Kevin Fishbane and Hub Arkish, and we'll soon be joined by Greg Gabriel, who is a longtime former NFL scout and college scouting director, and want to get you up to speed on what has been already a pretty crazy NFL offseason. We are going to talk some draft, we're going to talk a little bit of free agency, and try and have some fun along the way. So, Kevin, Hub, how are you guys doing today?
Doing well. This is pretty exciting. Get the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I know Hub, the radio show, was big, and you can talk more to that in the future of that. But, bringing PFW to the digital audience is pretty exciting.
Yeah, he's so modest. He's helping bring it. He doesn't want to take credit as the host. He's the creator, the founder, the host of the Pro Football Weekly podcast. It's Arthur Arkish. So we're just here to have some fun, guys, and it's free agency and draft time, and what could be more fun than that?
That's right. And, on that note, I think we're just going to go ahead and dive right in. We are all back from the NFL Combine. It was a exciting week in Indianapolis, and we figured who better to kind of get you up to speed on what was going on down there than Greg Gabriel, who I mentioned has a over 20 years of scouting experience in the NFL. He is also the author of our 2016 Pro Football Weekly Draft Magazine, which will be on newsstands here in just a couple weeks. And pleased to be able to bring you Greg Gabriel. Greg, how's it going?
Real good. How are you guys doing? And it's really nice to be part of Pro Football Weekly and the relaunch of Pro Football Weekly.
Well, thank you. Yeah, there's a ton of excitement, and certainly we're just flattered to have you on board.
I just want to tell you guys what I love about this. Is Greg, in his second year as the author and head scout for the Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide, when Greg started his tenure as the director of college scouting for the Chicago Bears, I was still the color commentator on the Chicago Bears radio network and, of course, writing around Chicago. And so a lot of what Greg did was around making sure that I knew as little as possible about what they were scouting, what they were coming up with. And now we get to work together on these scouting report. So it's been a ton of fun, Greg, and this year's magazine really came out great. Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you very much. It was a lot of fun doing it.
And again, our listeners, we hope you'll go out and get your copy of Pro Football Weekly Draft Magazine. I believe it is on sale Tuesday, March 15th, so it should be at newsstands everywhere. And Greg, I don't want to waste any more time. It was a busy combine week. I want to ask you about some of your winners and losers and big takeaways from the week. But before I do, I know a lot has been made about potential changes to the structure of the combine and maybe some workouts that are a little dated at this point, ways the NFL is brainstorming to make it an even more valuable tool for scouts and NFL teams. Do you have any thoughts on maybe workouts that still are effective, maybe some that aren't? What do you think about some maybe potential changes in the pipeline?
Well, in all honesty, I'm all for changes, and the main reason being is that everything now has become the learned drill. You know, for the participants, they go to these performance schools for 4 to 6 weeks before they go to the combine, and they practice the certain drills that go on at the combine, and these drills have been going on since 1985 when they had the first combine. And nothing, the only really change was the three cone, and that's been around for over 20 years. So what happens is you're seeing the players do the drills, but because they've practiced these drills so many times and they've perfected their steps doing the drills, that you don't really get a true test of their athleticism. You're going to find out, or the coaches and scouts are going to find out really more about that at pro days and at private workouts, because then the player doesn't know exactly what to expect. Now, I was talking to a personnel director earlier this afternoon, they were told at the combine that the league wants to make a lot of changes. And one of the things they want to change is, and we won't see it for a few years, is that they want to move the combine around. Just like they started moving the draft around, came to Chicago last year, it's in Chicago again this year, they want to do the same thing with the combine, moving around, and also have the fans be a bigger part of the combine experience.
Man, Greg, it's almost like the NFL looks about this more about the money than what's actually at stake. But one other thing that comes out of the combine that I think is always kind of funny every year is the quarterback hand size debate. I don't know if you know this. The only reason I'm not an NFL quarterback is my hands were too small. Otherwise, I'm sure I would have made it. But, you know, we make a big deal about Jared Goff and those, you know, the 9-inch hands. We make a bigger deal about Carson Wentz and his hand size. You've been in these draft rooms. You've scouted these guys. You've been around with the measuring the hands. How much of an impact does it really make on a guy? And are we? Is it just one of those things the media makes a bigger deal about?
No, it really does. With receivers and with quarterbacks, hand size is important. A lot of it has to do with ball security with quarterbacks. The way the ball comes out of their hand has a little bit to do with ball strength, because the smaller hand could be in a smaller wrist and you don't have that snap. Comment I got today from a personnel director was that Goff may be dropping a little bit. Wentz has become the number one quarterback, not because he's ready to step on the field and play. It's because what he can be 2 or 3 years down the road versus the other guys. Paxton Lynch is a guy that seems to be dropping a little bit, and he had the biggest hands, I think at 10.5 or something. And the reason being is he didn't do as well in the interviews. From a physical standpoint, everybody likes what he can do. He's got a great arm. He can move around well. He's got good accuracy, etc. But when it got to, okay, draw stuff up on the board as far as his offense and stuff, being that he was in a very simplified spread offense, he struggled at that part of the interview process, and teams are a little leery and think that the learning curve with him could be a little bit longer, and really the same with Goff. And on top of that, you had the 9-inch hands, the slight frame, and really not a great arm. He's got above average arm, but he doesn't have a cannon. And so I think that Wentz has become the number one quarterback, and now it's a flip a coin between Goff and Lynch at number two, with Goff probably having an advantage only in that his offense was a little bit more sophisticated than Lynch was in.
You know, Greg, I'm a little intrigued by this idea of moving the combine around. It would be a shame only because Indianapolis is so well suited to it. Lucas Oil works. You've got that huge hotel complex around it. But in what you heard, would they even consider going outside? Because it strikes me more than half of these kids are going to play in northern cities. Maybe it would be interesting to test them and work them out in late February weather, which they will be playing, not in late February, but that kind of weather, really the last 5, 6, 7 weeks of the season.
Well, in order to get a fair evaluation, you have to have, I would think you have to have the inside. You know, the first combine in January 1985 was held at Arizona State. It's the only one that was outside. And Harry Buffington, who was in charge of national scouting at the time, went to Phoenix because the chance of rain during the month of January was like 8%. You know, and they went back 20 years looking at the dates at the combine. Was set up to be at that time. And as it turned out, there was rain two of the days, and everything was performed outside. So I think the next year they went to New Orleans, and it was right after Super Bowl 20 that the Bears were in. It was the following week. And then since then, it's been in Indianapolis, and I think Indianapolis has done a great job. But the league is looking at, and none of this is official, it's just, you know, a lot of the teams were told about it during the combine that, it's something the league is looking into, even though they have a new contract with Indianapolis. From what I understand, it's like 1 year renewable contracts, and it's not a straight 5-year ongoing contract. So I think one of the first places they're going to be looking to go to could be Los Angeles when this whole new huge complex is built for the Rams at the new stadium 3 years down the road.
Chatting with Greg Gabriel, the author of the 2016 Pro Football Weekly Draft Magazine and longtime NFL scout, college scouting director of the Chicago Bears. Greg, I don't know if there were a lot more uneven combine performances than we saw for Robert Nkendiche. I don't even know if I'm saying the name right. I apologize. But on the field, I know that he blew a lot of people away with his workouts and was as advertised in that terms, you know, in that portion of the combine. He also had one of the more awkward media interviews I can remember at the combine, really maybe created some more questions than answers about some of the off-field issues he's had, whether it was at the hotel or even some of his what he called laziness on the field. What are you hearing about Kim Dichie after the combine and kind of what his stock has done?
Well, pretty much what you just said. I think that there's a buyer beware sign attached to him. He's got great talent, but at the same time, that talent hasn't always translated to the field. When you look at him and you say, oh, he's a dominant offensive line or defensive lineman, then you look at his stats and he had seven sacks in 3 years. And when you look at his athleticism, that doesn't compute. I think he picks and chooses as a player. Some of it you could compare him a little bit to Clowney a couple of years ago. Clowney had some injury problems going in there, but Clowney in his last year at South Carolina really did nothing. You know, he played like a fifth round pick, not the first pick in the draft. And I think the same thing happened with Kim Dichie this year. He had a couple of games where he really showed outstanding talent. A lot of times he just kind of coasted, knew he was going to be coming out, was playing not to get hurt instead of playing hard and up to his optimum talent. So I think that's what teams are worried about. They know they have a great talent at the draft, and they're just not sure what they're buying as far as competitive nature, overall attitude, and work ethic.
You know, Greg, this whole thing with Kim Dichie, and it reminds me of Randy Gregory last year. I think what bothers me the most, he's a college kid. You know, you got to be pretty dumb to get so stoned you're falling off the balcony of your fourth floor hotel room. But the fact that he's doing it before the biggest game of the season with seemingly no concern or focus on what he's doing, to me, that's probably the bigger red flag.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's like, what were you thinking? And it goes into your overall preparation process, your pride in yourself, your desire to be a great player, and it's really kind of a selfish attitude. Or you could take it in another direction, say he's just plain stupid, not knowing better, as he's preparing for a bowl game and then preparing for the combine.
Greg, I'm curious, in your years as a, you know, scouting and whatnot at the combine, do you have a memory of a player that you know, the tape and the combine, where a combine really altered a guy's stock, whether it was via something he did in his interview with the team, something he did on the field positively or negatively? Do you have a good memory or a good example of a player like that from your time?
You know, not really, Kevin. And the reason being is that the players are expected to do well at the combine, and you're going in with a preconceived notion of what kind of athlete each player is. But now if they exceed that, perfect example would be Spriggs from Indiana, the offensive tackle. He doesn't play to that athleticism that he showed at the combine as far as change of direction, quickness, explosiveness. You know, on tape you see a guy that's not good athlete, not a great athlete, and not as strong or as explosive as he showed at the combine. So when that something like that happens, that means you got to go back and look at more tape and say, okay, where did I miss it as far as my initial impression on him during the season? And the same thing happens, you know, with guys that don't perform as well. Because again, you're expecting each guy to live up to his anticipated athleticism, and when he doesn't do that, then you go back and you have to ask the question: did I overrate him as an athlete during the season, or did he not prepare? And if it's a case that he didn't prepare, then you've got a football character problem with him going forward. So that raises a red flag.
Another question, Greg, kind of going behind the scenes about what it's actually like versus the way we kind of see it on TV or hear it in the interviews. I'll give you an example. Jalen Smith's up there at the podium, and somebody says, Jalen, how many teams have you met with? And he says, 9. And then somebody yells out, well, have you met with the Steelers? He says, no. And then suddenly every beat writer wanted to know if he met with their team, because then if you tweet, hey, Jalen Smith met with Team X, all the fans go crazy. But it seems like, I mean, it seems at this point, in a lot of teams meet with a ton of players, you know, when you hear that a player actually met with a team at the combine for a formal interview, how much stock really goes into that decision for a team to interview that player?
Well, number one, you're not going to find out a whole lot in a 15-minute interview. And, you know, you're going to supplement that interview either at his pro day, at a private workout, or he's going to be one of your visits that you bring in, you know, between the middle of March and the middle of April. So it's really a get-to-know-you type thing. Another thing is that at the combine, you know, in the last couple of years, we've had 100, basically 100 underclassmen in each of the last three drafts, and a large portion of the invitees to the combine are those underclassmen. And these are kids that you haven't had a chance to interview, talk to, whatever, at the All-Star games because they can't play in them. So you spend that time at the All-Star games going through interview process with a lot of the current seniors, and really you get more than 15 minutes at the All-Star games. You can almost have as much time as you want. They do put a little time limit on the Senior Bowl the last couple of years, but still, if you want to get the kid at another time or place during the Senior Bowl, you can do that. So I think that, you know, you can't put a lot of stock into it. Teams keep track of what the other teams are looking at only, and so part of it is, you know, that you might purposely not interview a certain player as to not show your cards that you may like him. Sometimes you may interview a few people that you really don't like at all, only to throw some other teams off, knowing that the other teams keep track of who you're talking to.
Hey, Greg, real quick, I just want to backtrack. I know Arthur mentioned the Pro Football Weekly 2016 NFL Draft Guide available on sale March 15th. Actually, our CERC people did a great job, and it's going to be available in most Barnes & Nobles as soon as March 4th, and the stores between March 4th and March 8th, and pretty much about 90% of the newsstands around the country by March 8th. So we've got it out there a week early. We hope everybody will grab it. You did a great job on it. I know we got to let you go, but there's one more guy I want to ask you about before we let you go. I think it's a foregone conclusion that short of a trade, you know, maybe Wentz becomes that valuable. A couple other players we can talk about. It looks like Laramie Tunsil, the big offensive tackle from Mississippi, is the number one overall pick. The guy that I've been really impressed by, both at the combine and watching a lot of tape, is Ronnie Stanley from Notre Dame. An awfully awfully talented and athletic young offensive tackle.
The book on Stanley is that he's pretty much a lock to go in the top 10. There are some issues, and that is, you know, he needs to get stronger, but you can say that just about every college player coming out. They just, you know, they've never been in NFL-type weight programs. His upper body and lower body strength need some work. But as far as his feet and his bend, and then you look at his length, he's got rare traits. He's got traits to become a potential all-pro player. Now, on the negative side, some things that people are looking at and worried about is he doesn't always play to his athletic ability. You know, he gets a little lazy sometimes as far as one play to the next play to the next play, and he'll get beat a few times when he should never get beat. I think, you know, overall intensity level sometimes is questioned, and he's more of a finesse player than a power player. You go back and you look at the LSU game last year in the bowl game, that probably was his best game as a player at Notre Dame. He was very physical. And then you look at other games and you go, wait a minute, why isn't he like he was at the LSU game? And it was that LSU game was that he was a good chance he was coming out last year, and then he got talked out of it by the Notre Dame staff, and he came back and he really played with a lot of fire in that LSU game. But I think you saw that in spurts this year. You didn't see it all the time, but still, his traits are so strong, he's just going to be, you know, a top pick because very few people have those natural traits that he has.
Well, Greg, after watching what the Broncos did, obviously, to both the Patriots and the Panthers in the playoffs, I think NFL teams will be happy to hear that a guy like Stanley thrived on the big stage. And frankly, this whole OT depth and draft looks pretty good. This is For Real on the way out. We understand you have a little bit of buzz on, I believe it's Arkansas tight end Hunter Henry and what's not supposed to be a great tight end class.
Yeah, I mean, we saw going into the combine, you know, he was in a lot of mock drafts, and the general feeling is there's, you know, what he didn't run at the combine. He was 250 pounds. He only did 13 reps on the bench, which is, really marginal 300-pound bench presser. His blocking leaves a lot to be desired. And then when he didn't run, I think that turns people off because he was a junior. You want to see what he can do. He's going to wait till their pro day. He might go in the second round because he is athletic. He can play in space, good route runner, good hands, but absolutely no blocking ability. And I think we can close out the idea that there's going to be a tight end drafted in the first round.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on the Arkansas Pro Day, but it sounds like tight end needy teams aren't going to be too thrilled. Greg, we thank you again so much for your time. We're hoping to have you back throughout the draft process. So thank you again. Great information as always, and we'll talk to you real soon, okay?
Okay, guys. Thanks a lot.
Take care, Greg.
That was Greg Gabriel, the author of the Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide and a longtime NFL scout and clearly a friend of the program, employee of the program. We'll have him back often. Want to turn the page a little bit, guys. I'll just let you kind of reflect on what Greg said about the combine and kind of what's coming in the next several weeks on the draft front.
Kind of bummed that he says hand size is important. Kind of like making fun of that, but he does make a good point. Jared Goff had some fumbles, and there are stats about how many starting quarterbacks have hands bigger than 9.5 inches. But, I found that last piece kind of interesting about Hunter Henry because I saw him actually 24th in a mock draft that I read today in the first round, and he's somebody that I didn't really heard a whole lot about until we started putting together a draft book, and tight end is a position that everybody's looking for Gronk, and there just are no Gronks, and it's been year after year after year of terrible tight end classes. There's not a ton of good ones in free agency, so that's got to kind of to monitor moving forward.
I actually am just glad to be back in the podcast studio because I had forgot that we always do these broadcasts with the angelic grin of Tom Music looking at us all day long. And Tom, one of the original ChicagoFootball.com guys, hopefully will be a contributor to ProFootballWeekly.com. And I miss Music. I enjoy his tweets. As far as the draft stuff, guys, it just the more things stay the same, the more they're going to change basically over the next 5 or 6 weeks. And sometimes this is analysis through paralysis. Is what it really should be about is about their college tape and their interviews. And the rest of this all becomes a lot of smoke. Now, obviously, if you've got a guy who was great on tape in college and he's got a drug problem or if he's got a personality problem, that's something you should be concerned about. But I get hand size. I get the four-cone drill. I get all this stuff. I just don't think that what a guy does in shorts and a T-shirt should overrule what he did on a football player when it comes on deciding where you're going to draft him.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and it'll be nice to kind of turn the page on the combine. And yes, there will be a little bit of paralysis with all the continued analysis, but we'll turn the page again and talk a little free agency because we're taping here from the podcast studio on Tuesday, and it has been a wild day in the NFL where 9 different franchise tags have been handed out around the league. It's the most since 2012. A couple surprises in there, although most instances were teams whose hands were pretty tied, whether it was Von Miller in the Broncos or Eric Berry with the Chiefs. Obviously, the Panthers weren't going to let Josh Norman go. But is there one tag maybe that catches you off guard or maybe changes how the rest of this plays out as we open free agency here next week, March 9th?
Yeah, I've talked a little bit about it in some of the video we've got going here at the site. I know it's become very popular to tag place kickers because you don't want to lose the best. You don't have to overpay. It doesn't strangle your cap because the average of the 5 highest paid place kickers in the NFL is still going to be in the $4 to $6 million range. You're not going to get clobbered. But looking at Kelechi Osemele, who I think may be he certainly is one of the 3 or 4 best remaining free agents. He was the best offensive lineman, or is, I guess, until he moves on, the best offensive lineman with the Baltimore Ravens. I really thought if they were going to tag somebody, it would be Osemele and not their place kicker, Justin Tucker.
If I'm Kirk Cousins, I sign that franchise tag right now. $19.9 million? What did he make last year? $400,000? Go sign that tag, son. Go get your paper. Get paid. Get your money. I mean, that I totally get why Washington's doing it. But if you're Kirk Cousins, you have, what, one season where you played pretty well for the most part. You surprised some people. But I didn't watch last season thinking that Kirk Cousins is going to be a star moving forward and deserves a long-term contract. Go sign that player 1 year and then, go from there. Because if he doesn't sign it, I guess you could take your chances, get a long-term deal, get your $30-40 guaranteed $1 million. But, man, $19.9 million for 1 year for a guy who had one season starting experience, I say you go sign your tender.
We should note one other guy who not only didn't get tagged on Tuesday, he got cut on Tuesday. And that would be former Houston Texan, former Buffalo Bill Mario Williams. Mario Williams signed the richest defensive contract in football a few years ago in Buffalo, was not a fit last year in Rex Ryan's system. Maybe not the player he was his first 3 or 4 years, but there's going to be a team out there looking to play a straight 4-3 defense for a hand-on-the-ground right defensive end who's going to go nuts and probably get a bargain. Williams is going to get a lot of money. It's not going to be the deal he got last time, but that is, you know, we've bemoaned a lot the lack of depth in this free agent class, how much it was really kind of strangled by these 9 franchise tags. But there's an addition to the pot in Mario Williams that is going to make a splash somewhere.
And a pro tip, if you want Mario Williams on your team, make sure you have good hunting grounds nearby. He was an avid hunter, and I remember being told during the Buffalo Bills, flirting with him in that courtship, that having some areas for him to hunt was very important.
Seriously, where else are you guys going to get this information, guys? Kevin Fishbane is dropping knowledge over here. The NFL teams with the best hunting backgrounds are going to be at the top of the list for Mario Williams, potentially.
We learned it's an issue for Carson Wentz, too.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you want to draft him and get him signed, you got to have a place for him to go shoot something.
That's a good call. Of course, Mario Williams, a former number one overall pick. He is 31 years old, and he definitely has lost a little something, but you can't find that kind of size, that kind of versatility just anywhere. So he is going to be in hot pursuit. We'd like to bring in our Pro Football Weekly colleague, senior editor Nate Atkins. And Nate has been on top of this today regarding all these tags and all this news breaking. And Nate, let me ask you, is there maybe one story that surprises you, or maybe just kind of what are the reverberations of what we saw today with the 9 tags and kind of what jumps out for you?
I guess the most interesting one to me was Jermaine Johnson getting the one from Los Angeles now, just because you just weren't sure which direction they were going to go in between him and Jenkins. I think he could have gone either way with that, but it was interesting just to see them kind of wait it out with both guys, even though they were kind of clearing up cap space here and there, really some different guys, whether it's Chris Long or James Laurinaitis, and kind of wonder what they were going to do there. And it truly came down to a decision of one corner or the next corner, and Jermaine Johnson is it. But I don't think the other ones were too surprising, other than maybe maybe Olivia Vernon getting the transition tag. But, you know, other than that, I think they've kind of been what we expected so far, just a lot of them.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think Olivia Vernon getting the transition tag from the Dolphins really says that they like him. They don't necessarily love him. The Dolphins have their hands tied with regards to the cap, and I don't think it'll be surprising to anyone if another team comes in and makes Vernon an offer that the Dolphins aren't able to match and he leaves. So we'll be interesting to monitor. Hub, what are you thinking over there?
Well, I was just thinking that a lot of our listeners who know that Nate is a Missouri grad probably think he's bummed about the Rams going from St. Louis to Los Angeles. But the truth is that Nate and our group editor, Dan McCaleb, are the last 2 Cleveland Browns fans left in the world. And, Nate, I was actually asked a question by McCaleb today. He said, did the Browns tag anybody? And we all just kind of looked at him and laughed, like, yeah, who?
Exactly. I mean, they'd like to tag someone like Mitchell Schwartz, but would he sign that? Not if he's sane.
And we do, it's worth mentioning, we do have a couple Browns free agents on our top 51 free agent list that you can find on profootballweekly.com. I believe we have center Alex Mack, who was able to opt out of his deal and is going to test the waters at, I think, number 20. Tayshawn Gibson, a former Pro Bowl safety, is also on that list. So the Browns do have some decisions on their hands as well.
Yeah, and Nate, I mean, I, again, I'm not trying to pigeonhole you. We're all writers. We cover the whole league, but we all followed teams. We were younger. You covered the Browns. I think Tayshawn Gibson is one of the most underrated free agents in this class. I mean, he's a ball-hawking safety. He may not be as physical as you'd like, but he's got great coverage skills, and he's a guy who I think is going to get paid.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the guys that, watching them this past year, as much as they underachieved on defense, and he's in that category, but it was more injury-related, I felt like. But that's a guy that's just loaded with talent. I mean, 2 years ago, he was leading the league in picks before he got injured. He had 6 there through just 11 games. And, I mean, that's a guy who's, like you said, he's a ball hawker, and he's only 25 years old. And by all means, a high-character guy who works pretty hard. And in this safety group, even though Eric Berry got the franchise tag and he gets out, I think he's going to be a guy who's going to fly under the radar a little bit with guys like Eric Weddle and George Iloka and Reggie Nelson and names like that. So that's a guy that you want a young corner with a lot of upside, a young safety with a lot of upside, I think you got to look for Gibson.
Yeah, Arthur and Kevin, I think one other thing to remember about Gibson, when the Browns waved goodbye to T.J. Ward a couple of years ago, who was the Pro Bowler, it was because he was the opposite. He was not the high-character guy. They knew they had Gibson there, and they chose to focus on him rather than Ward. So there's a young man that may be not as well-known as others who could have great value in free agency.
Yeah, it's a great point. And actually, Nate made another great point. It's funny because every team is looking for these playmaking safeties, and that might be the irony of this free agent list. He just alluded to several of them. Yes, Eric Berry is off the market, but George Iloka is a young, experienced starter with big-time size and hitting ability. So we believe he is definitely going to have suitors. Eric Weddle, his best days may be behind him, but he's able to compensate for any athleticism he's lost with the smarts and intelligence. We know he won't be back with the Chargers, so still an opportunity for teams to maybe improve at the safety position. It's kind of funny given that you kind of view it as one that's it's hard to field for NFL teams.
Well, and none of those guys have been as productive as Reggie Nelson over the last six, 7 years.
But
the problem is Reggie Nelson's 72 years old, so you got to be a little careful there with him.
It's weird how you're kind of seeing some of these late blooming safeties around the league. And I want to talk about Denver real quick, just because you mentioned T.J. Ward, and I think the reverberations we talked about a few minutes ago with regard to this franchise tag, I don't think they're being felt stronger anywhere than they are with the Broncos. And Malik Jackson, who was obviously a stud in the playoffs, Danny Trevathan, who has made a name for himself as being a terrific coverage linebacker, Brock Osweiler, who some thought was maybe going to be Peyton Manning's successor, they're all going to hit the free agent market, Kevin, and it's going to be fascinating to see how the Super Bowl champions are able to respond, who they're able to retain, if any of the three.
Yeah, it almost reminds me of hockey. You know, we're based here in Chicago. We see every year the Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup, and they got to try to find to make some cap adjustments. But Malik Jackson, I think, is going to be too expensive for them. I think Danny Trevathan is going to be too expensive for what they would pay him. So they could see saying goodbye to those two players. I mean, they brought back Derek Wolfe. They have Brandon Marshall, so they have them some depth there. I'm super curious about Brock Osweiler and what's going to happen there. We've talked about Peyton Manning. We expect him to retire. He should retire. Do they pay Osweiler a lot of money? And if you're Brock Osweiler on the Rams or the Browns or someone's going to pay you more, then the Broncos need a quarterback next year.
Yeah, I think the issue for the Broncos there, guys, is they've probably got, with Miller tagged, enough cap space to go big after one other player. They've invested 4 years in Osweiler. Realistically, they don't get to the Super Bowl if he doesn't do what he did. I didn't think he was sensational, but he showed enough. I don't see how they can afford to let him go. They may not have a tag on him, but here's a kid who knows that his best hope is with the defending world champions as their starter. And as long as they can get close on the money, Nate, my guess is that Elway finds a way to get close on the money, even though we're hearing that teams like the Houston Texans might be serious about making a run at him.
Yeah, that's the thing that's interesting. Is now that he's hitting the open market, I mean, you'd like to say, how did they let him get away? But they're already going to let him get away, in the sense that they didn't, they obviously couldn't use a tag on him. He's going to hit the market. And, you'd think they'd want to pay up for him. At the same time, will they break the bank more than a team that's just absolutely desperate for a quarterback, whether that's, like you mentioned, Cleveland or Houston? And, especially when Denver wins the Super Bowl, and they do it how they did with Peyton Manning, basically, making checks at the line and throwing 15 yards downfield and trying not to be completely terrible, and they win it with their defense. I mean, just how much are they going to break the bank to get the quarterback back rather than a guy like Malik Jackson, who contributed a lot more to that Super Bowl run than their quarterback did?
Well, the only thing I would throw in there, though, guys, is that there is no plan C. I mean, Peyton's not coming back, whether he wants to or not. If he's going to play, it's going to be elsewhere. Osweiler's the guy they've invested in. If they let him get away, they got nothing. And that's why they spent money on Derek Wolfe.
They have nothing there.
I know. Yeah, go ahead. Give me your Northwestern crap.
I'm just saying, Trevor Siemian's sitting in the wings, ready to go.
Yeah, that's where he's going to stay, sitting in the wings, on the pot somewhere, but he ain't going to be the starting quarterback of the Denver Broncos.
I believe it was Nate that either said on this podcast or in our offices within the past couple weeks, it was the 2000 Baltimore Ravens, the last Super Bowl winner to lose their quarterback the next season. Of course, that was Trent Dilfer. Wouldn't it be something if the Broncos lost not only Peyton Manning but Brock Osweiler? So that is something to keep an eye on, obviously, here in the coming weeks. We're getting ready to wrap up here, but I do want to just ask – I want to ask Nate quickly. The running back position is another one in free agency that people may frown about. People may say it's devalued. There's a couple really, really good players, and one I know you followed kind of closely, obviously, in Chicago, and Matt Forte. Is there any logical fits you see? What do you think Forte can bring to a team? And what about other guys like Doug Martin and Lamar Miller? It seems like like there are some pretty solid starters out there to be had.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see this year, to see three guys like that hit it, and then it's at a time when we've kind of devalued the position, and so, you know, they're falling behind kind of, you know, some of these almost second-tier players, even though they consider them first-tier running backs. You'd think that the contenders would be more likely to do it, especially a guy like you mentioned, Matt Forte, who's 30 years old. You know, a guy you look at just for the next couple of years is something you can bank on. You'd like to think, theoretically, the Patriots would be interested in that, but knowing the Patriots, I really doubt it. You know, it's interesting. I think the Packers would be a great fit for a guy like Matt Forte. I mean, that name's been tossed around a lot. I know you, Arthur, have written a lot about that potential matchup if they do want to finally go with free agency. But, yeah, it's just an interesting time right now to see three guys like this hit the market, and I'm really interested to see if Doug Martin, if he, you know, where he ends up, because he's the best guy on that list of the running backs out there, and yet, you know, it's kind of interesting to see Tampa sort of let him get this far into the process and not want to bring him back. Might say a little something about the running back position there.
Guys, that's the fascinating thing about the running back position. At any other position, a Martin or a Miller would be worth a lot more than Forte, because you're going to sign a multi-year deal. You can give him a lot of guaranteed money. At this position, the perception that you can find him everywhere, Forte is the most valuable for what you're going to get out of him this year. Maybe this year, one more year. Now, he may not get as big a deal or as much guaranteed money as the other two, but he's probably going to be the first priority to a team that thinks that he's the difference in you know, going deep in the playoffs.
I know a lot of people have talked about the Patriots being the perfect fit because Bill Belichick's raved about Forte. He would fit in that offense very well. He and Tom Brady would work great together. I would be stunned if the Patriots are going to pay a running back who's 30 years old $5 million to play next season. It's not the Patriot way to do that. And I wonder if anybody's going to be the exception to the rule, it'd be Matt Forte. But that team keeps coming up. Everyone talks about Forte and the Patriots, because they've brought in the LeGarrette Blunts. They've had some of these veteran running backs, but they never paid them very much money. And Forte's going to want, you got to imagine, at least $5 million a year.
There is precedent, though. If it's something they want to do bad enough, people were stunned when they traded for Logan Mankins,
right,
too.
Yep.
And he became the focal point and the anchor of that line for 3 or 4 years or 2 or 3 years, whatever it was. We all agree it's not the Patriot way, but when you look at where they're at, even though Brady is now signed until he's 91 or whatever, you know, it's another year, two, three at a time. This team is turning over a lot at a lot of other positions. If they think he's the difference for 1 year, I don't think it would be that shocking.
It's not the Packers' way either, obviously. That's been Ted Thompson's caught a lot of flack this offseason for his unwillingness to go into free agency. But I can't think of a lot of better ways to incentivize Eddie Lacy, who needs to lose 30 pounds. James Starks is hitting free agency. Forte, and not to mention it's a way that Forte could kind of maybe stick it to his former employer if he wanted to.
And again, where's the precedent? What did Thompson do 2 years ago?
Great call. Julius Peppers.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm not predicting either of those teams, but even though we don't expect them to do it, the reality is if the guy is unique enough for the need, it could happen.
My prediction would be Dallas Cowboys. If I had to pick one right now, say Forte goes to the Cowboys.
I like it. The best offensive line in football, depending on Darren McFadden, is obviously
I think the other two. I still think the Packers and Patriots are better fits. I would say if I had to pick one right now, I think Jerry would pay for him, and the Cowboys need a running back, and Dallas is a little bit closer to where Matt grew up there in Louisiana.
Maybe you know what's funny? What's funny about it, though, guys, because we're based in Chicago, we've been around Matt a lot. One of the classiest, best locker room leaders, one of the best team guys in the National Football League. Does he want to go live in the cuckoo's nest for 2 years? I mean, guys, we've been around Matt Forte. It will be a consideration. I'm not saying he won't do it because of it, but I guarantee you it'll be part of the thought process.
Well, yeah, lots of good stuff there. You guys should go check out the column I wrote actually the day that the Bears told Matt Forte he wasn't coming back. Also on ProFootballWeekly.com, I have all three of those teams listed. There's lots of good stuff at ProFootballWeekly.com. We hope to be bringing you a lot more of these podcasts. I'm going to put the guys on the spot real quick because we haven't hit on free agency just enough yet. At least I have one in mind if they don't. Is there one guy that maybe not everyone's thinking about that you think could turn into be a steal in free agency? And because I'm putting you guys on the spot, I'm going to go first. Colts tight end Dwayne Allen. The dual tight end is becoming a dinosaur in today's NFL. Dwayne Allen is 26 years old, hasn't been able to stay healthy, but I think in the right offense, he could turn out to be one of the steals of free agency. I'm going to throw it to Kevin and Hub. Again, I put him on the spot. If they don't have anything, I'll apologize for him.
Hub, do you have anything?
Well, I actually do, so I'm going to let Nate and you go first. And guys, if you don't, you don't. It came out, but I've got one. Nate, have you got anybody in mind? I don't want to steal your guy if you got somebody. That's the thing. I got two, so.
No, I'll let you go real quick.
All right. Well, guys, I mean, I've been thinking about this for a couple weeks. I'm going to guess that the majority of our audience, they may know who he is, but they don't think much about him. Kelvin Beachum is a guy who has been being developed in Pittsburgh for several years now, and he kind of came out of nowhere and had an outstanding year at left tackle this year. Now, the Steelers would love to have him back, but the Steelers have got issues of their own, not so much with their free agents as needing to almost completely rebuild their secondary. They're not in the best cap space of various teams around the league, but I think Kelvin Beachum, who isn't going to break the bank, is going to get himself a nice deal, though, because of the position he plays, could turn out to be the steal of this free agent class.
That's the one I was going
to
pick.
Well, I gave you a chance to go first. What are you going to do? Then go with Kelechi Osemele, who's another one.
Kelvin Beachum, one of the two left tackles we have on our free agent list, so a good call by Hub. There's a couple guys that didn't make it, Russell Okung and Donald Penn, so we'll see what type of interest Kelvin Beachum has. All right, I'm done putting guys on the spot, and I think we are done talking to you today, but we really, really appreciate you listening, downloading, and as I said, Pro Football Weekly is back, guys. Don't call it a comeback. We've been here for years, and we have a lot of good stuff in store in the coming weeks, months, and years. So thanks for joining us, and we look forward to doing it again down the road. For Kevin, for Hub, for Nate, I am Arthur Arkish, and we will talk to you very soon.